Welcome to This is Type 1, real-life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. I'm Colleen Mitchell, and I've had type 1 diabetes for 23 years. By day, I'm a process analyst in the power industry, and by night, I'm an author, blogger, and virtual assistant. I'm passionate about type 1 diabetes education and showing others that this disease doesn't define me.
I'm Jesse Tuggy, and I've had type 1 for 7 years. I love hiking and painting, and I'm looking forward to working as an engineer after college. My diagnosis has inspired me to take control of my future and learn everything I can about it.
Each week on the show, we'll talk about real life with type 1 diabetes, bring on cool people with connections to type 1, and above all, encourage you to understand that this disease doesn't have to hold you back. This isn't medical advice. This is life with type 1. Welcome to episode 32 of This is Type 1, real life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. Today, we're talking with Pastor Seth Bodie, a type 1 diabetic in the clergy, with a unique perspective on handling the challenges of type 1 diabetes. A quick reminder for everyone, if you have any questions about type 1 diabetes, please leave us a comment or send an email to colleen@inspiredforward.com. We answer listener questions in future episodes. So I'm up for the win of the week. I just got back from my three-month checkup with my endocrinologist, and my A1C is 5.3%. So I'm still in the area I want to stay in, which is below 5.5%. So I don't even care that I'm up 0.2% from my 5.1 in December. I'm just glad that I'm staying in the 5 range, which is amazing. Jesse, what is your fail this week?
So my fail isn't actually from this week. It's from 2 weeks ago, but I thought it would just be relevant to today's episode. So I started putting my CGM back on. Woohoo! So that happened, and I put it on, and then I accidentally didn't put it on for the first day of track. Now, this isn't detrimental, and it didn't add, like, any extra, like, steps or, like, any extra stress, because I knew what I was doing. But it did add a lot of steps to managing my diabetes and being able to practice a track, because we did do a long workout. We did about 5 miles that day. So it was just a lot of extra, like, okay, what's my blood sugar now? What's my blood sugar is 15 minutes. What do I need to eat? Do I not need to eat? So it was just a couple extra decisions that I didn't necessarily need to do, but I did anyways.
Okay, so what's our hack this week, Jesse?
All right, so all of you lucky kids who have a 3 to 6 week break, just like me, are these next couple of weeks due to our favorite coronavirus. Please watch your carbs and please be mindful of what you are eating. Although it may like seem like a vacation, it's not. It's not going to be where you sit on your keister all day and munch on food that you don't need to and don't want to go outside because it's cold. Just be aware of what you're eating and what your blood sugars are. I'll be wearing my CGM all 6 weeks, even though I'm not going to be doing much or any strenuous activity because I can't go work out at my gym. So just be mindful of that. Be mindful of what your blood sugars are. And please, please, please stay safe in your homes.
That's actually a really good point that it don't treat it like a vacation because it's not. Even though a lot of schools won't be doing online learning like yours is because they can't handle it or it's disproportionate to the number of low-income families who maybe don't have access to computers at home. So, but please don't treat it like a vacation. You can find ways to be productive and learn things even when you're not in school.
Or even that, I challenge all of our lovely listeners to go back and listen to all of our previous podcasts.
Yes.
At this point, we have plenty. It'll occupy you for a while. Also,
right.
Another thing, just go one ahead. More reminder to my juniors out there who are in high school, take this time to study for your SATs. I know I will be, just because you're going to have 6 weeks of unstructured, unsupervised learning or studying or goofing off or whatever you're going to do. Don't take it for granted because although my SAT time got moved, our AP tests haven't gotten moved yet. And this could change, but as of right now, they haven't been moved and we just need to keep our eyes out for that.
Yep. All right. Let's get into the interview with Seth Bodie. All right, Seth, welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. What an honor.
So we're just going to dive right in. And can you give us the rundown of kind of who you are and the role that diabetes plays in your life?
Yeah, it's just been a ride. I was not the first one in my immediate family. My name is Seth Bodie, and my older brother already had it, my brother Nathan. And I guess maybe that's not part of this question, but as far as you know, something that's always on your mind, the chronic illness of it, the whole situation, that it affects everything you do, especially if you like to do athletic things or you don't like to do athletic things. It's such a balance, you know. It's something that is kind of close to you too, I guess. From my part, it's something that I think is a little bit of a gift because it makes you conscious of what you eat and what you and how you play, but at the same time, a curse because, you know, it stinks in so many ways.
It totally does. So how did you find out that you have diabetes since your older brother already had it?
See, I'm so fortunate that way. I've listened to a few of your podcasts as much as I could, and I know that, I guess, I haven't always thought about what it's like if you didn't remember what it was, what life was before that, but I definitely do because I was 13, and my brother had it for like 7 or 8 years already. So for me, it was so easy because a couple of warning flags came up for my mom. I was using the bathroom a lot and drinking a lot of water, and I was in eighth grade, and my mom just was like, well, you better just check it on your brother's monitor. And sure enough, it was like 235. And at that point, it's like, there's no question what's going on. But at the same time, I knew kind of what I was falling into. And I had about a week too before they were like really firm on the diagnosis. So I had like that existential week of, what if this is really happening? And it happened. So it's kind of a big deal. But like I say, super fortunate because like when my brother got it, he kind of withered away till he was super skinny and was hospitalized. And it was just this strange thing we'd never heard of. So
besides your brothers and you, is there anyone else in your family with it?
No, it's really, and I'm the middle child of five, and he's just the next older brother, and we're the only ones. Later on, my grandpa got type 2, but I mean, that's kind of different.
So what are your favorite things about being type 1 diabetic, and what are your least favorite things?
Yeah, my favorite things about type 1 diabetic might not be type 1 specific. It's probably the Wolford Brimley memes is my favorite thing about diabetes.
Diabetes.
Yeah, so good.
I've had to train my endocrinologist to stop saying diabetes.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's she's getting better, so we're working on it.
For the longest time, I said diabetes myself. So I don't know, actually. I go back and forth because I've lived in different Midwest states where you're not supposed to say drinking fountain. You're supposed to say bubbler, or you're not supposed to say pop. You're supposed to say soda. So, you know, nothing beats Wolford Brimley. But to be honest, though, I really like the emphasis on being conscious of your exercise. My big sport was football. I actually played through my high school and college years. It was a small college, and actually with your pastor, we played football together. I was on the line, and he was a running back. So it was always kind of important to know where you were at, but it was also like it forced you to think about it and decide how much exercise you were going to do. So
are there any like major, like least favorite things, like any specific snacks or like events that could have happened that just was like, we're not doing the whole diabetic thing today?
Oh yeah, so many. But as far as least favorite, I just think the feeling of a low blood sugar is probably like my least favorite thing. I just don't like that because it messes with your mind and makes you want to eat everything in sight. So.
Yep. Yup. So how do you manage your diabetes? So your insulin pump, if you're on a pump, or a CGM, just like what's your tech?
Yeah, I'm an Omnipod user. So, I mean, it is what it is. I liked it just because it's remote. And I was actually corded. I was lined probably 15 years ago with the old, what was it called? Cosmo?
Never heard of that one, no.
Blast from the past. It was like probably between 2003 and 2006, I had a Cosmo, and I had a little Cosmonitor on the back, and you could check your blood sugar with that attachment and then adjust with, it was all kind of in one package. But I found that something I was later told that because of where I was wearing it, I just didn't get the insulin delivered right. You know, I was wearing it on my hip, and I think it was an Omnipod rep, might have been a sales technique, but she said, guys tend to only get 75% of their lined insulin just because it's fighting gravity coming up from the hip. And that was consistent with my experience, whether that's true or not, because there were times when I felt like it didn't really accomplish what it was supposed to. So on the Omnipod right now, it's kind of bulky and probably I should probably be looking ahead towards different tech.
So are you on a CGM?
I have tried a CGM a couple times. I am one who it just messes with my mind and I overcorrect, and it was bothering my wife at night, beeping and going nuts. But I think maybe after having a baby, we just had our first, he's 14 months. So it's been over a year, but it's still kind of been a whirlwind, and you kind of figure out what it's like to not sleep. So maybe the beeps won't matter as much if we get something a little more sophisticated.
I heard that Dexcom is integrating with the new Omnipod soon. So that might be an option when you upgrade.
Well, that's why I listen to this podcast, for information. So I appreciate that. I might look into that.
Yeah. And if you have questions about Medtronic at all, let me know, because I'm kind of the Medtronic girl on the show.
Okay. I've heard good things too. I've heard really good things about that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff that they're coming out with this year where it'll be attached to your phone. There'll be like one calibration per 24 hours. And then within the next 2 years, they're hopefully going to combine the sensor and the Mio site in one.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyways, so what are some diets or, you know, meal plans that you found that work best for you? So like vegetarianism, veganism, Colleen and I both do keto. I've been experienced with being vegetarian. So have you found any that work for you?
I do not follow a strict routine diet, but I do count carbs super consciously. You know, we all have to. And I just kind of operate on the principle of, I guess if I'm not eating high index carbs, then I don't have to account for them in my insulin intake. So, I mean, if I follow that, and I guess it's just difficult for me with diet because I've always had a hard time with satiation, feeling satisfied when you're not eating what you normally do. So it used to be a lot easier when, you know, you're younger and you're exercising and you don't have responsibility. And I guess even at 35, I'm still kind of figuring out the adult part, and certain things just kind of keep changing and you get older still. So, I mean, the olding never stops, the adulting never ceases. And there's like stages it seems like I'm going through in more ways than one. And it's just, so you just kind of operate on some principles. But I wish I could do more of like a vegetarian thing, but I just, sometimes I need that meat to kind of satiate. So yikes.
It's all the fat and the protein that makes you feel full.
Right. Yeah. Feeling full.
So we like to ask all of our guests what burnout means to them. What does burnout mean to you?
You know, and I really appreciated you guys cast on that because I hadn't heard of that really. I think I've been a little bit unplugged with the community and some of the terminology, but I've really kind of grasped a few things about that since I heard your podcast on it. And because you guys, that wasn't too long ago, right?
Yeah, I think it was a few episodes ago, so not that long.
I think it's just that feeling of hopelessness when you feel like you factored in everything, but either there was a curveball that you just couldn't have factored in, or the math never added up anyway. And you just had that experience where it just jettisoned and you decided to eat everything and then it skyrocketed and then you just feel terrible. So for me, it's usually like bouncing back from a low that I go way high. And that's where I think the burnout is, like, I'm just not doing this right. So I feel like giving up.
Have you found anything that kind of works for that, even though you didn't really know it was called burnout before then?
Yeah. And it dovetails with just being Christian, I think, is having a little bit of self-discipline and realizing the mind over matter, I guess, that what feels right isn't necessarily what's good. Like all of that chocolate that your wife was stashing and you found it, or all of that cereal that just never needed to be eaten.
Does your wife know about the chocolate?
Like sometimes she gets there. She's pretty astute. She's onto me. Yeah, well, I guess I was going with self-discipline. So maybe it did, but that doesn't always work. So I guess certain things not having in the house, or making sure she doesn't tell you where the stash is.
So do you have any advice from a Christian perspective on the burnout for diabetics? maybe from a different perspective or not just from the self-discipline part?
I think we are affected in our society with just, and I know not everyone is this way, not everyone has a lot. So I don't mean to be glib towards those who maybe don't have this experience in America, but I have a lot of luxuries in my life and it's so easy to just do what feels right. And I don't believe in a puritanical take on everything. I'm Lutheran, so as far as that version of Christianity goes, there isn't like a whole lot of teetotaling, like nothing is strictly verboten exactly. You know, we still have a couple beers and we still do things that, you know, some religions or some versions of Christianity say that that is always wrong. But at the same time, you know, everyone gets to that point where I think you realize just because it felt right doesn't mean it was right and it wasn't beneficial, and moderation can be clutch in certain circumstances or in everything. And of course, that's not a summary of the Christian faith, because the Christian faith does more than that. It takes away your sins and doesn't just tell you how to behave, but shows you that behavior is complete and completely correct in the Savior, Jesus Christ. You know, he does it perfectly for everyone. But that's not an excuse then to just go live recklessly and damage your body and not be a good steward of what you've been given and hurt other people. It's all the more reason to take responsibility and do what you can with the time and the material gifts you've been given.
Very cool. That was awesome to hear. So have you experienced any major changes that you've seen with your diabetes over time? So like therapy, diet, life expectancy, general expectations of your type 1 diabetes, like has this changed over time? So like before having a kid and like after having a kid or something like that?
Or before the Cosmo pump and after the Cosmo pump?
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Like a big change has been, well, when I first was diagnosed, the meters were 45 seconds. And then pretty quick, it was 5 seconds. And I was first put on regular and NPH insulin. And then soon enough, there was Lantus and Novolog. And now I use Humalog. But I've changed from shots to pump to shots again. I was shots for a long time, even into this decade, this past decade. I think it was 2014 when I finally got back on a pump. So I've tried to manage it in different ways. And I really think it's incredible how wonderful the technology has come. I mean, it's improved so much in the 22 and a half years I've been diabetic. So
I've been on a pump since 2002. And I'm just so excited with all of the pump technology updates now. With the Tandem pumps, they just released Control IQ, which will give you insulin for highs, and it's paired with Basal IQ, which stops insulin for lows. And I just had my diabetes appointment today, and I'm just so excited to get it.
Nice. That's the next step, right? Combining things, like combining your sugar and the automatic, that's just really cool. I'm looking forward to that.
I don't know very much about the Omnipod DASH system, but I think that's the next kind of step forward with the Omnipod systems is the DASH.
Okay.
From what I heard about the DASH system, I was at my diabetic appointment, I think Thursday. From what I heard, it's just going to be like a constant updating of your algorithm in your pump. So it won't just be like this one algorithm that you get updated every 3 months. It'll be constantly updating with what your daily life is going to be. And my pump does that now too. So yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. I really need to do more. Like it's changed so much that I feel like I can't keep up with it personally. But
you could take it every 3 months at a time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Knowing what you know now about diabetes, what do you wish you'd done differently in the first few years of your diagnosis?
You know, there's not a lot, just because like I said, I was so fortunate and I had a born best friend to take me through it. My brother is 2.5 years older than me. And, you know, he kind of showed me the ropes. So I think the harder learning curve is going from the student life to the adult life with responsibilities, or going from single life to marriage, or going from married to having a baby. Like, it seems like those are the steps that have been more difficult for me personally. So no big regrets, but I was given a real gift. So
very cool. Do you have any favorite diabetic cherished memories?
I don't know about that one. I don't cherish a whole lot about it.
Maybe we could ask this a different way.
Yeah.
What's, What's the funniest thing someone has said to you about your diabetes, or the strangest thing someone said to you? Because I find those tend to stick out.
That's good. So is your whole family diabetic? I mean, it was someone who just knew me and my older brother. So it was like, oh yeah, I guess, you know, that might be the next logical question for someone. But at the time I was just kind of like, how could you ask that?
All right. This is one of my personal favorite questions. What's your favorite diabetic snack? Like all time low snack?
Oh man. Well, when I get low, I just feel like it opens up the whole world of food for me. So everything looks good. And I really become a way less picky eater. And I'm not really a picky eater, but with a low blood sugar, it's like, man, that like wooden cutting board over there looks great. But as far as like what I keep with me, this might be kind of simple. And I don't know how many people really like the glucose tabs, but I'm a big glucose tablet fan. So I keep those with me all the time.
When I was younger at Panther Camp, they had this specific kind of glucose tab where it was in a little foil packet and they were all white and square. They were the best tasting glucose tabs I'd ever had in my life. And I can't find them anywhere now.
Oh, fountain of glucose tabs, like the hidden fountain of youth.
I know, right?
Wow, you guys got lucky. I had the bad glucose tabs in this case.
Yeah, I mean, what are some other favorites? That's an interesting question.
Well, I do Smarties, my Smartie rolls. I buy them in bulk on Amazon. And I've found that one roll will bump my number up a little bit. And it's basically perfect for me.
That's right. I've heard you say that. That's good.
Yeah, and I get the kids pack of like fruit snacks from Costco. And I'll munch on them. Like I'll put a bunch in my car or whatever. And just those are my favorite. And they also get my blood sugar up. Even though they're meant for like 5-year olds, it's still pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. It does make you feel like a kid again. It's awesome.
So I know that you said you were kind of unplugged from the diabetes community for a while, but from what you've seen so far, what improvements would you like to see in the community?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am not one to critique just because I am unplugged. I mean, the way that this is packaged in a podcast for me, I've just discovered for myself that I get more interested in stuff that's podcasted. So, I mean, this, I commend the whole concept of a type 1 diabetes podcast. And I'm not one to critique at this stage because I'm the one who, I know I was told about camps growing up, but for some reason we never went. And maybe that's because we were so plugged into our Lutheran schools and like the church activities that we were involved with. But it would have been wise back then. And maybe it's still a good idea. I know you've said it's a good idea when you're an adult too. So I'm not going to critique at all, but I would listen to you guys on that.
Good to know. So I don't know if we've actually said it yet on this episode, but you are a pastor and we want to talk next about how all of that kind of plays into your diabetes. So how did you decide to go to seminary and become a pastor? Is that something you always knew you wanted to do?
You know, it's not. My dad is a pastor and my oldest brother is a pastor. And church is kind of like in the blood. And for that reason, there were times when I was just like, man, what else can I do? I don't really think that's what I want to do because everyone else is doing it in the family. And for me, it took a while to kind of own it for myself. Not that I was trying to be convinced, but it seemed like a good idea to go to pre-seminary because, my brother's had gone and I wasn't really sure what else I wanted to do. But what hooked me was the Latin. And this is such a dorky answer, but I really attached to Latin classes in my high school and German classes. And so it started me off on a natural path to learn confessional Lutheranism and scholastic works from the 16th century. This is so dorky. But part of our worker training program is pretty thorough and teaches you to learn Greek and Hebrew, the original language of the languages of the Bible. So I have a background in all those languages and I fell in love with that part of it before I was really interested in people, which is kind of backwards, I think, in a lot of people's minds, but that's how it happened. And I'm naturally an introvert, but I've definitely developed the extroversion side of being a pastor and it's been a fun journey. So it took me a while and I saw other people who wanted to be a pastor from early on. Like my dad's a pastor, so I'm always going to be a pastor, or I've always wanted this, even though no one in my family is. But then after a while, things happened and took them off the ministerial course. So it's kind of funny how that all works out.
So it sounds like your diabetes didn't have any role in that, right?
Yeah, not really. In fact, it might not really be the ideal career for a diabetic or the ideal calling for someone with this disease because of the natural high that takes place when you're talking in front of people. You know, I have to watch that every Sunday, and a good Sunday means I'm getting up early and doing some plyometrics just to be ready for the sermon. Adrenaline release, you know?
Yeah. Wow. I just figured out that what that does to my blood sugar too. In the last month, I've given 2 conference presentations and my blood sugar is like going up.
Yeah. It's like you didn't see that coming, but yeah. And you guys had a good conversation about that too, about like, would you rather be low or high at that point? And I think I would rather be high, but still isn't cool.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't want to have to snarf down a roll of Smarties in front of people with a microphone on.
Exactly.
Well, you were also a police chaplain. So what did that entail, and how does your diabetes kind of play into that a little bit?
Great. Yeah, that's another job where you're naturally on call all the more. And we kind of decided what days of the week we would take as chaplains, but then you are on call or you are on duty. And I typically like to ride at night with the police officers just because not just more interesting things happen, but sometimes less pedantic things happen. Like people aren't in the community we were during the day. Sometimes it was people just like checking their houses that the security alarm went off, and 99% of the time during the day, security alarm goes off. It's a malfunction or new battery needed or something like that. So I would ride at night. And when that takes you so late into the night, that can do some funny things to your diabetes.
What does a police chaplain do?
Yeah, great. And there's different kinds. Some police chaplains are police officers themselves, but those of us who are really just clergy kind of along for the ride are there to support the police officers primarily and be there for them if they need anything. Sometimes just talking things out. It's a natural confession booth. It can be, I should say. Not every police officer is interested in that, and that's totally fine. But some of them found it useful, I think, and surprisingly so, to get some things off their chest. And that was kind of part of my mission too, personally, was to be there for them, because the way I see it, I got into it around 2014 when a lot of things were happening on that front, and there were 2 sides to a story. And I thought if I could be there for police officers, if there was any way I could help them be in a better mindset and be more positive and make good decisions. And a lot of them are making such difficult decisions all the time that it's easy to become negative. So I just want to be a positive influence and force for the law enforcement authorities, because they're so important.
I just want to say thank you for doing that. That is really good work.
Thank a local law enforcement officer. You're welcome. But it's so, like, for me, it was just such a passion that it's them that make me kind of geek out. And just because it's amazing work that they do. And so Ferguson happened about 45 minutes away was when I got into it. And a whole lot of people were coming from outside of Ferguson. And I think there was a lot of opportunism going on, and also a lot of troublemakers coming in, as well as people who were trying to help and meant well, but I don't think Ferguson needed that. So I was trying to help in my local community, and I just thought that was important, and trying to see both sides of the story and being as much of a support as possible in the situation.
So besides your blood sugar spiking before you give a sermon, how much does type 1 diabetes affect your day-to-day life as a pastor?
Well, there's a couple things, and what I like about being a pastor, it has to do with how your day can vary. It's one thing I like about being a pastor is you can spend all day visiting people, or you can spend a long time reading and studying, and a lot of it's valuable. It's a difficult balance, but a couple challenges are that you're sitting down a lot, whether you're driving to hospital calls or to people's homes or to this or that event or planning worship. So sitting down a lot is not really good for a diabetic, or really for anyone. And I think that poses a number of challenges that make that difficult. And I think as a pastor, a lot of the risks are going too high. as opposed to like landscaping for a living or something where you're like probably trying to dodge the lows as much as you can.
Okay. This kind of just popped into my brain since the COVID-19 thing is going on right now. How is that affecting your church and your decision since you are type one and we might have compromised immune systems, even though I've heard from JDRF that that's not the case right now?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I don't know how much that compromises me. I guess I figured we were probably more at risk, but is that not true?
I got an email from JDRF earlier this week saying that type 1 diabetics are not more at risk, but I'm not sure how much I believe that because it's an autoimmune disease and sickness, you know, when your immune system is
being sick at all. Right.
So from what I heard, Mary Bridge, my hospital that I go to, we're just slightly more above risk. It's nothing to be like super panicky about. But from what I heard, we're just supposed to be a little bit extra cautious, you know, but not like change our day-to-day lives at all.
Yeah. And obviously with church, you end up with a lot of elderly. And we actually have a pretty good group of out of 215-ish members at our church. Probably 50 of them are 14 years old and younger. So we have a pretty good young crowd. But we also have a preschool, and that had to be closed just because we were following the school system as a private school. We were following the public schools, and we called Sunday school. So then we usually dovetail that with adult Bible study. So that's canceled too. But I'm not going to give up on church services. We're just not going to pass an offering plate, and I'm just going to tell them if people choose to sit farther away, don't take it as an insult because, you know, people are just being cautious. And then some people are just not going to come to church, I think, because they're aged or feeling not as safe. And so we're taking as many non-threatening precautions as possible. And we stream our services too.
That's definitely a good option.
Just on that front, because I mean, it's such a hot topic. I guess I feel like there's a line between testing God and trusting God. Like I trust God that he's going to keep me safe. And at the same time, I also know that God does allow illnesses into the lives of the best people, let alone me. So it's like, you know, if that happens, it's in his hands, and I'm not going to go looking for diseases. And at the same time, Thursday, part of the job was holding the hand of a guy who was low on oxygen with a trach in the ICU. So, I mean, you find yourself in those situations where I wouldn't give anything to not be there.
That's really encouraging. And that actually kind of dovetails nicely with the next question is, were you ever mad at God for your diagnosis? And did you ever blame him for it or something like that?
It's a good question because I definitely understand that psyche. I definitely understand the urge to blame circumstance, if not God. And, you know, we didn't ask for this. It seems like it's not something that we brought on ourselves. And I really don't think the answer is it's my fault that I have diabetes. You know, it's obviously in God's hands. So it does make sense to blame God in a way, but I've ever gone too far down that road personally, because I guess if you want to call it a faith tradition, in my version of Christianity, my faith tradition, we emphasize sin and guilt and how it's not that God intended for people to do wrong. It's that we fumbled the ball with the gifts that he gave us from the start. So sin is our responsibility and it's our problem that we brought into the world. And if you look at it that way, it might seem uber negative. It does get uber negative if you look at it that way. If you call sin what it is and make that the reason for all of our problems, for death as well as illnesses, it does seem dark. But then at the same time, you appreciate God for being the highest good and for being the one who has the power and the will to heal all diseases. Whether I experience that healing now or in eternity, he's going to heal me either way. So I feel like God makes you a better person if you're willing to see lessons in things like diabetes, and he makes good things happen out of the bad. I think that's an incontrovertible truth if you believe in God.
That's really good. I know that I've never blamed God for it. And I think it's a blessing, honestly, because it gives me the opportunity to do things like this and talk to other people with it. And I also think that my mom and my dad, too, my parents were just super strong. And he wouldn't have given me diabetes, or I wouldn't have gotten diabetes if they couldn't have handled it. And that's kind of my perspective on that.
Right. Yeah. I think God gives you the strength for things that are overwhelming. And I try and take myself out of the equation, because if it's up to me, then yikes. You know, I pray that there's a Lutheran prayer that Martin Luther from the 16th century used to pray every time he approached the pulpit. And he talked about if I was ever on my own, I would easily wreck it all. And I take a lot of comfort in that, because then where else do I turn but to God? And I find a great deal of comfort and hope there.
That was just good to hear. That was really nice. Thank you for that. That was just cool to hear. So do you have any like Bible verses or anything that could help with like diabetics struggling with their faith because of their diagnosis or because they have diabetes?
Absolutely. This coming Sunday, in a lot of liturgical churches, whether you like a straight form liturgy or you appreciate a more free form contemporary worship, is not the point, but a lot of us are approaching John chapter 9 this particular Sunday in Lent. And in John chapter 9, Jesus and the disciples, the 12, kind of stumble on this man who's born blind from birth. And the disciples are like, so who sinned, this man or his parents? And the assumption there in that question is, well, it was someone's fault. Someone was responsible for his blindness, or something went wrong, and that's why he has it and we don't. And it almost implies karma. And if you listen closely to Jesus, he kind of denies karma, even the idea that, you know, what goes around comes around. There's some kind of equal and opposite force that's going to come back at us. If we send negative energy out into the world or positive energy, you can get good things. Jesus, instead, he says, neither his parents nor he sinned. He said, this was done so that the work of God might be done through him. And
I'm reading along with you.
Oh, very good.
Yes. Yeah, I just held up my Lutheran study Bible.
Glorious. It's a good purchase. I have large print for my diabetic eyes.
My mom gave this one to me. She kept her large print version.
But I just love that passage. It's been important to my family in difficult times and times of disease, because I know my dad really embraced this one early on with some of the afflictions in our family. But it takes away the feeling and need to blame, and it replaces it with, okay, what is the work God is going to do in my life now? And for the blind man in John chapter 9, Jesus healed his blindness so that people could see that he gives not only physical but spiritual eyesight. He gives us a way forward in the world, and then through the world, and then to the end of the world and beyond. And I find a lot of hope in that, no matter what's happening. It holds a close place to my heart when it comes to diabetes.
That's awesome. So this is kind of something that's been floating around in my head. Type 1 diabetes diagnoses have just kind of been exploding recently, and nobody knows why, but I read the Bible all last year, and I'm rereading it now, and I'm in Joshua now. But one of the things that I've read is that whenever Israel broke a covenant relationship with God, they were punished either with disease or some other thing. And have you ever thought maybe this explosion of all these different diseases right now, including type 1, might be kind of divine punishment for straying so far from his design?
That is a thought that I have never had specifically about diabetes. And I guess, yeah, all disease is consequence of sin. I'm not sure if they had this one in the Old Testament, but it wouldn't surprise me, just because of how, really in the history of the world, how recently we discovered this thing, you know, just in the early 20th century, extracting pig insulin and, you know, figuring out how we can actually mitigate some of the difficulties that come with diabetes. How far back does it stretch?
I know that I have seen references of ancient Egyptians talking about it. It was called like sweet urine or something like that. So the ancient Egyptian physicians actually knew about it, and they actually called it the same thing that we call it now, just in their language. So I know it stretches that far back.
You've done more historical work on that for sure. And I know you guys talked about the Hansel and Gretel thing, a movie I never saw, but I was like, wow, they wanted to put that in there just based on your conversation. I was like, why would you do that? But I guess when you start going into specifics, like I feel a little cautious about saying this is judgment for this or that trend of moving away from God's plan for my life. But it is true that certain sins can bring about specific consequences. You know, if I go cheat on my wife, which is just way far from my thoughts, I only have eyes for her, but if it ever did come up, it's like there would be a specific set of sins there and then a specific set of consequences. It would be like violating trust with her and violating a lot of things with my family versus, you know, if you go and, I guess, beat someone up at a local grocery store, you'd have a totally different set of consequences and retribution for that kind of thing. So, and a lot of it would come from society too, and not necessarily from God. So I guess I see illness from my perspective, I see it more as like a cross to bear than specific punishment for this or that sin. But if you do look at humanity as a whole, yeah, I mean, if you have a theology of sin, disease comes, that's a consequence of what sin has brought into the world. So, but once you start pointing fingers and saying specific things, then I think you get into trouble, because just like I was talking about in John chapter 9, you can say, well, I wonder what that person did. You know, he doesn't have all his mental capacities, or he doesn't have his legs anymore, or, you know, and then you're in pretty dangerous territory imputing bad motives on people. That was way too long of an answer for that question.
No, that was totally awesome. What relationship advice for diabetes can you give?
I think, and a lot of this comes out of the same kind of thinking with some of these other questions of, you know, how much do you build up against God versus kind of channeling that in a more positive way? And I think that if you really get down to brass tacks, and I do this for myself a lot, if you really get down to brass tacks, there are so many worse illnesses than diabetes that debilitate people so badly. And I know we're all headed towards a bad place with our hearts. If we're not careful, we're headed towards a bad place with our nerves, if we're not careful. And the immediate feeling is awful when you have a low or a high. But I also thank God that I can still feel a low. And I thank God that I have systems in my body that are working so well and so involuntarily, like things that I don't even have to think about, like breathing and tasting and swallowing. I guess for me, when I've seen my first funeral was 7 or 8 years ago, a lady had Lou Gehrig's disease. That's not a great first funeral, because it's sort of like your whole body shuts down. And I thought of it because I said, if you can swallow, because she got to the point where she couldn't even swallow food, but her mind was all there. So you're kind of trapped in your body. And it's an awful thing when you have, what is the proper word, like ALS, when you have some of those diseases. I guess I've always thanked God and approached life with a thankfulness to God, because this one I can deal with. This one I can gain control over. And this one has a lot of tech that helps me out in such wonderful ways that other diseases don't have yet and may never have. I think that approach to life is just huge. I know you've talked about like some negative communities out there for type 1 diabetics. And yeah. I have seen those.
Yeah, there's a Facebook group that I was in, females with type 1 diabetes or something like that. And it just descended into, I'm complaining about everything all the time. So I left.
Yeah. And it certainly is a cross to bear. And there are definitely times when I think you need to vent. You need someone, you need a punching bag, you need to kick something, you need to do like 80 squats and just rep it out. You know, you need to bust your muscles or something so that you can just kill this high, or you can rage. But you also need to learn how to channel that positively and in general approach life with a thankfulness that you, I guess for me, it'd be hard to get without God.
Sorry, I'm tearing up over here. My grandfather recently passed away, and it's a lot. It's good to hear some of the stuff that you're saying is very reassuring to me. Anyways, sorry. It was his time. It was cancer, so he kicked it, and then it was just like he was at his peace, and it was his time.
Yeah, totally.
So what is your favorite verse in the Bible, or your favorite Bible verse?
Well, it fits so well. I love Matthew chapter 5. There's a point when Jesus just starts to preach, and Matthew 5 verse 4, Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And I like that one so much because it's not like you're going to get through life without tears or sadness, but the feeling of being comforted, sometimes it's like better than you were before you mourned. And he goes on in verse 6, I also like, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. I like that one because you're like, what do I hunger and thirst for in this life? And when I have a low blood sugar, it's, you know, this massive beast that I'm hungering for, like everything in sight. So kind of helps you focus, hunger and thirst for the right things.
Oh, definitely. All right. Since the Bible tells us that we are created in God's image, has this ever impacted your view on being diabetic?
That is a oft-quoted thing, that we're created in God's image. And I think there's sometimes a little confusion around what that, how to interpret that. I see that as perfection and holiness, and to be able to be in God's likeness and image is sort of a sanative thing, like a thing that we Christians are working on day in and day out. So with a chronic illness like diabetes, where day in and day out things change, and it has to do with your self-discipline, has to do with where you are in the moment, and I guess it has a lot to do with diabetes. There's a lot of relationship there with how I behave. You know what? That's another thing. Like when you have a high blood sugar and you want to be grumpy at other people, where it's not just the physiology, but the physiology goes into like your behavior. So how can I be more like God rather than bow to this disease that's making me grumpy and lash out at everybody? I just know that sometimes I'm not myself, or even worse, I am myself. I'm acting out my sinful nature, and that's not a good thing. So it's always a goal to strive for.
That kind of makes me laugh because I'm thinking now that whenever I'm high, I can just go, if Jesus had diabetes, he wouldn't be mad about this.
That's right. The whole new meaning to what would Jesus do?
Right.
Jesus would bolus.
And he wouldn't rage bolus.
Right.
So what are some things that you do kind of outside church to keep your faith strong? Maybe going hiking, or like what things connect you to God outside of church for you?
Things outside of church. I like to go to the gym. I like to sing and listen to music and sing. My son is, and my wife are the focal point of my non-church life as well as my church life. I mean, they're super important to me. And I spend a lot of time with him trying to teach him and trying to get him to say words. Although right now it's just mom and dad and ah and no, or no, no, no. It's like, how did he learn that word? But we used to do more hiking. There's a lot of monuments in Indianapolis. We've started to try and visit some of those national monuments or state monuments. So that's kind of fun. My wife and I like to visit old houses too, like from the 19th century or 18th century, if you can find them. And just some of them are mansions. Like my wife's from Milwaukee, so we visited the Pabst Mansion there. We visited some Laura Ingalls Wilder stuff in South Dakota when I was teaching at a high school out there. So just some quirky things we like.
I just thought of another question that we didn't put on the list that we gave you. As a pastor, how does insurance work?
I'm privileged to say that we have really good insurance, and our congregation really takes care of us. And it depends on the congregation. Our synod or church body is nationwide, and there is a Blue Cross, Blue Shield, VBA situation that a lot of churches do. I think there are some others out there, but we have really good insurance. And another reason why I've been very fortunate, I know there's a lot of talk there too, and I've just never experienced expensive insulin because of that. But I think it's good to keep that in mind because it's probably people real close by, real near that maybe could use a donation or a heart or something, like a Christian heart, to help out in that way. I know you guys have talked about that a little bit on the podcast too.
All right. And then do you have any questions for Colleen or I?
Oh, I have so many questions for you guys. But I mean, a lot of things get answered from podcast to podcast, I guess. Oh, that's a good one. You guys, now that I have you, I'm like, wait, what did I want to ask you? I mean, I would love to talk about your pumps and everything.
Well, we could also do a separate follow-up where you just ask us all the questions.
Oh, sweet. That'd be great.
So maybe you need to come up with a list and then send it to us.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's do that.
I'll do that.
Yeah, let's do that. Upcoming episode, Seth asks us all the questions.
Oh, sweet. That'd be fun.
Awesome. So then, moving into the wrap-up questions, since we're going to make your questions for us a completely different episode, what advice do you have for the young diabetics out there?
Oh, man. Young diabetics, it is confusing. I think social life is confusing in school. And I guess because diabetes is such a package deal that affects you in so many ways, your whole day with your human relationships, like the people you love, I would say just get a lot of hugs. You know what? Just whether it's your family or friends, you know, you want to be there for people and you want to maintain a positive attitude, get a lot of hugs. Yeah, no, I've heard once that you need 8 hugs a day for your emotional sanity. And I'm all about hugs.
Yep. So, yep. As someone who was called the huggy monster in elementary school, I get what you're saying. I feel hug deprived sometimes.
I just got to get a good hug. Even if it's a side hug, you know, right now, hugging a baby, there's no better feeling. We didn't have a lot of pets growing up, and I have a wonderful dog. So I would also encourage you, if you can needle your parents to getting a pet, there's a lot of free hugs to be had, especially when everyone's kind of going crazy with coronavirus.
So are there any projects that you're working on right now that you're like really excited about that you really want to share with everybody?
Well, when it comes to church stuff, like in our church, we're really working hard on a charity committee to show forth the light to the community around us. Our church body does a lot of charitable giving, but since our church body is focused in Wisconsin, sometimes in Indiana here, we don't see the benefits of that. And we're working on doing more local charities and finding ways to connect with people a little better and share the gospel. So that's a project that we've been working on a lot lately.
Awesome. So final question, if people want to connect with you, where can they find you online?
I have a Twitter handle at BodhiRev. I'm on Facebook with our Bethlehem page. That's our church name, Bethlehem Lutheran Church of Carmel, Indiana, Wells. That's WELS is our church body acronym, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. But if you're ever in the Indianapolis Carmel area, we're right off of Highway 31 and Main Street in Carmel, Indiana. So feel free to give me a shout out or connect with me that way, or give me an email at revsethbodhi@yahoo.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been awesome talking to you.
Well, thank you for having me. This is great. I love community.
Woo!
Definitely.
Our diabetes spotlight this week is on COVID-19, the coronavirus. JDRF sent out a note earlier last week that those with type 1 diabetes are not more at risk of contracting the virus, but that doesn't mean we don't need to take precautions. A lot of workplaces are going to fully remote operations. Schools in Washington State have closed for 6 to 8 weeks, including a lot of the private schools because they follow the public school systems.
It's all private schools, all schools period.
All schools period.
All schools period are closed until April 24th. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
Just like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Travel plans are canceled, including mine. A lot of business travel has been restricted to critical only, and everybody's freaking out. I've heard that we should not actually experience delays in our shipments for diabetes supplies. So that's good. And for the love of God, please don't go out and buy all the rolls of toilet paper from your local Costco. This is not a virus that increases the need for toilet paper. As type 1 diabetics, what we do need to focus on is keeping our blood sugars under control. If you do get sick, talk to your doctor. Maybe go to the emergency room or urgent care if you were in contact with someone with the virus and you're showing symptoms. Keep a good stock of supplies on hand. We did an episode on basically stocking your disaster kits. If you get sick, you'll probably need ketone strips and some glucagon, and continue eating normally if you can. The best thing you can do for yourself is to remain calm. I'm not overly worried, and the social distancing that's happening is actually happening a lot faster than it did in other pandemic situations like the 1918 Spanish flu. If you want a sign of hope, Apple reopened all of its Chinese stores after a month of having them closed because of the outbreak. Only God knows what's going to happen. Stay safe, guys.
All right. So our question for you, our lovely audience this week. Oh, also what you could do on break is answer all of our listener questions and get back to us about your answers. Hey, right? Look, you got stuff to do.
We haven't heard from any of you. Come on.
Okay, but our question for you guys this week is, how does religion play into your diabetes? For me, I sometimes pray for guidance or even a low blood sugar every now and then.
You pray for low blood sugars?
Sometimes. Like,
oh, when you have a high blood sugar, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, time for a low. Come on.
Yeah, so, that's a good point.
It helps. It really does.
This wasn't specifically related to my diabetes, but our SUV basically is having engine problems. And I was driving it down to the dealer, and I was praying the whole time, please let me get to the dealer with no issue. Please let me get to the dealer with no issue. And I only had to slow down once, and all of the lights were green. Prayer works, guys. All right. That is it for this episode of This is Type 1. Thank you so much to Pastor Seth Bodie for coming on as a guest to the show. You can find him on Twitter at Bodie Rev, and that's BODEREV. Or by email at revsethbodie@yahoo.com. You can find the show notes to this episode at inspiredforward.com/episode32. That's the number 32. And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode, please leave us a comment or send an email. You can get straight to our podcast page by going to thisistype1.com. Our music is by Joseph McDade, and our audio wizard is my husband, Tim. I'm on all social media as at inspiredforward, and our email is colleen@inspiredforward.com.
And I'm on Instagram as at JJ_CrystalKAT. Please feel free to send me questions or comments you have about the show or about type 1 diabetes.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends, your family, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and subscribe, since that helps other people find us. And be sure to listen in next week when we talk about how to tell if you're taking too much insulin. Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you. Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face to face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.